Thank you for your invitation. This talk is a result of collaboration with Sasha Grigoryan and Yuri Sukhov. Both of them are participants in this program, so I believe it's the right place for it. Right. So let me start with a pretty elementary problem. Consider a simple queue, which is written here. So it means that somebody will arrive for service to the queue. This person will wait for some time, suppose to arrive with exponential. Then the service will take some time against the exponential, and then it's easy to see from the picture that the time the next guy will wait is given by this simple recursion. That's what we usually teach our second year students. And the simple fact is that if this Poisson flow of arrival has a rate lambda, which is less than mu, that's the rate of service, then this system has a unique solution, which means that if you look at this equation, which is called Lidl equation in elementary queuing theory, then if we ask it whether we can find such a distribution that if we put a random variable with this equation and some independent exponential random variable, subtract another independent exponential random variable and compute the distribution of what we have as a result, we will reproduce the response that we had at the beginning, right?
And I'm sorry. Please tell once again what are on WN, L,
okay.
N, tau.
Okay. Look at this picture. Somebody will arrive for a queue, right? This person is waiting in the queue for some time, right? After this moment, the service will start. Then the service time, say, it has exponential distribution with some exponential distribution, for example, it doesn't matter. Okay? How long the next person will arrive later on? It's a blue person.
Delay to the arrival of the next.
Oh, yes. Okay. At this moment, clearly, the service of the second people could start. So this time, this person will wait. It's given by this simple recursion, as simple as that. Okay? So the answer is pretty easy, that if the rate is less than this, that there is a unique solution of this equation. If other way around, there is no solution for this simple equation, and the queue will grow indefinitely. Well, as simple as that. Okay. Now let's move one step forward. Let's assume that to get out of the queue, the person should wait not for one thing, but for two or m things. So suppose this person to leave the queue, he needs several independent services. Okay? For example, so suppose you want to transmit through satellite, right? So you have a queue on the sender end, right? So you need to be first in your queue to send the signal. But you need both channels, for example. So there is also the queue of any other users that want to use the same channel. So there's two people you're waiting for. One person who is the first local user in front of you. And his waiting time is WUN, right? And there is another user who is first among all the global queue of everybody who wants to use the second channel. And to transmit, you need to connect these two channels simultaneously. Then you can transmit. Then the simple picture will say you that this would be the recursion. Okay, so now if you look for stationary version, it's still on this slide. This would be the equation. So what you want? You ask the simple question, whether you can find such a distribution function such that if you take n independent copies of this random variable with this distribution function, this random variable and that random variable, m independent copies, then add to this m independent variables n independent copies of this random variable. They will have the same distribution. Okay, suppose it's exponential, doesn't matter. It's just some independent random variable. And also, you have n independent copies of another random variable, which is analog of this interval. You subtract from this random variable. Then you compute distribution of all this expression. You will, the question is whether you can reproduce your initial distribution. That's very simple, a very, very basic question. Okay? And the answer is not so obvious. already. So the answer is, suppose that everything is exponential, it doesn't matter, but it makes things a bit easier to comprehend at first. Right? That if the rates are related by this equation, okay? So if m equal 2, this is number something like 0.17157, okay? Then if this equation is satisfied, there is not one, like in this example, but infinite number of solutions. Okay? And if this equation is violated, there is no solutions. Okay? So what it means? It means that in a sense, if you look at this system, you can never forget your past. Right? In this system, this guy, after some time, what probabilist will say, renovation will happen, that all the past will be forgotten, and you start your life anew. But if you look at this system, then something, you will remember something from the past forever, okay? And it means that there is not a unique solution, but there is an infinite number of solutions of this simple equation. Okay, and here I presented some, it's not very serious, but just for maybe a bit of entertainment, how you can interpret this kind of stuff. Okay, of course, the most serious application will be to communication theory, but you can also think in some terms like, you know, you divide it. Yes, big city into some districts, so you have two queues. You have the queue, the story is written here, but it's not too important, but just say a few words. So you wait for two things. You want to see some professional doctor in the city, right? So you have a global queue of people who want to see this doctor. But also you have a local queue in your district for the ambulance. So you need to be fast in both queues simultaneously. Then you can take the ambulance and drive to this doctor. And then the next person will start waiting. This is some simple interpretation, common sense interpretation of this kind of mathematics. Okay, so I don't want to go further into this topic, but it could be elaborated. But what's interesting is that it's related to some so many other branches of mathematics that I want to show several examples. They all have some common root. So I move to my next example. The next example is which is surprisingly has very many features common is the first elementary examples. This is famous reaction diffusion equation, right? And usually people looking this is parabolic equation, only a parabolic equation, but usually people looking for hyperbolic type solutions, which are written here, which behave like a solid body, which called traveling waves. Okay, and it was proved in the 30s by Kolmogorov, Petrovsky, Piskunov that if you look for this equation and you want to find the traveling wave, then the speed should be bigger than square root of 2. It's some well-known mathematics. Okay, now let's look probabilistically of this equation. What will we see then? Okay, there is a famous Makin formula, which goes back to the 70s. Okay, this, I explain with this picture. First, forget about colors. The colors will become essential in a few minutes. At the moment, suppose there's just one type of particles. So we take just one particle, which starts a Brownian motion. And there is a fixed rate, which is one in this, because coefficient here is, why Brownian motion? Because this is a Laplace operator, of course. The rate is one because coefficient here is one, clearly. So with rate one, this particle will decide to branch. If it will decide to branch, it will always branch into two other particles. Because, why two? Because there's square root here. Nothing else. Well, the square root, but the square here. Okay? So from time to time, the particle will decide to branch into two offspring. They start independent motion, like initial particle. So we look at the picture backward. Up to the moment when all these images will cross the line t equals 0. If t equals 0, this is the initial condition for our equation. We take our initial function, which is, we have one initial condition for this equation. We put inside position of all offspring of all generation. Okay, we have the product of this initial function. And inside we put position of this particle, that particle, etc. And take expectation. And a simple theorem is which goes back to Makin to 70s is that this is exactly solution of this equation with this initial data. Okay? Now let's move one step further. Suppose we have not one equation, but we have a system of equations. Suppose it's not terribly important. Suppose they are polynomial. Non-linear terms are polynomial with non-negative coefficients. For example, suppose there is four equations here. So I say four colors, white, red, green, and blue. Okay, I will say for four system of four equations with some non-linear interactions terms. Okay, look at here. Suppose look at the first function. Suppose first looks something like this. It doesn't matter. It's just example. What it means? I did it for three. Anyway, so what does it mean? Suppose that if particle of type 1, because we're looking for coefficient 1, it describes the law of branching for particles of type 1. Suppose this particle will decide to branch. Then, with probability half, it will produce two particles of type 1, two particles of type 2, one particle of type 3. Okay? Or with probability SZ, it will produce one particle of type 1, 8 particles of type 2, 5 particles of type 3. Or with probability 1 over 6, we'll produce 2 particles of type 1, 7 particles of type 2, 11 particles of type 3. Okay, or whatever else you can imagine. So something like that. Then look at a similar picture. We want to find function U1. So solution will be function U1, U4 in this case. We want to find the function U1. So we start with a part with a single particle, which is white, because of with the responding color. And start independent Brownian, well, this would be Brownian mode with a drift in this case, because there is also a drift term here. Okay? And this would be the rate of branching for this particular type of particles. Okay, for a while this particle drifts in the space, then it decides it branches into three particles of two of color blue and one red, and so far. Now we look what will happen. What first picture we see when we reach our horizontal line t equals zero? We count. We have four types of particles. So we take the product like we did before. We take the product of two white functions, three red, four green, etc. Substitute positions, take expectation and the conditions that we start from this point with a white, single white particle. And this is the solution. Okay. All right. Now, the next question, how to describe the stable waves? If we want to check whether we can or we cannot have a travel waves with some particular velocity. What we shall do? Okay, the answer is as follows. Oh, sorry. Consider a 4x4 matrix. We have four types of particles. We consider 4x4 matrices. It's not, maybe should I swap it, or you can see it from there. Okay, all right. So what is the matrix? Here is E. This is the mean number of type K particles which appear if type J particle will decide to branch. Okay, this is the rate of branching. This is the drift. This is the diffusion coefficient. The matrix depends on one single real parameter A. If A is small enough, then clearly this matrix has all positive elements. So Piron-Frobenius theorem is valid, right? So take this Piron-Frobenius maximal eigenvalue. If we can find such a value of A, such that this period Frobenius value will be inside the union circle. That's okay. It means that for this parameter C, you can construct this Trevon wave. If not, then not, more or less, okay? Without going into much discussions. What will happen if we apply this technology to this simple equation? Here, this no matter because it's one equation, there's a number, right? E equal 2, because the branch is always into 2, right? So we put here 2, no drift. It's easy to see that if we want to check whether there is such A that the solution will be inside the union circle, then we have the square root. Okay. Now example number 3. This is all well known, but I needed to fix some notations that I will need anyway. This is some simple example. From harmonic analysis. It's a textbook example. Okay, so suppose this Fourier transform, this inverse Fourier transform, and also put the Planck-Schreil identity. I put it on the other side. Okay. Clearly, what we look for is this exponential factor. Omega is a point of single sphere, so this direction from infinity. So this is called a plane wave. Clearly, so what will be the plane? What is the plane wave if we speak if we want to walk in hyperbolic space on a manifold? Well, that's, then this equation will be written like this. This will be written like this, and Planck-Schreil identity will be rewritten here, right? And the kernel is related to Harishchandra function, and it's all well-known stuff. So the kernel which appears in inverse Fourier transform is square root of Harishchandra function. Okay, what I need from here? What I will use heavily is this, what is the analog of this scalar product? It's written here. So I want to describe what is P hyperbolic, right? Hyperbolic projection. With that I will need in the rest of the talk. So what will happen? So if we look for hyperbolic geometry, we can use either Klein model or Poincaré model. And I have written the matrix for Klein model, a matrix for Poincaré model. We will for technical, we want to be multidimensional, so we use Klein model, right? In the Klein model, we have a Schiffer for geodesic, which will be the straight lines and foliation by orthogonal surfaces, which are horribles. The foliation, by, we have a Schiffer of geodesic, straight line, and foliation of the whole space. This is a complete analog of this scalar product. That's what I will use in the rest of the talk. Okay, so we take a point, and we project this point along the surface, moving along the horribles up to the point it intersects a chosen geodesic. Okay, and this is called horribolic projection. And this will appear in all the formulas later on, right? Okay. Now I move to my topic. I used already too many times. So the main topic is branch diffusion. Now we can see this branch diffusion, but not on the flat space, but on hyperbolic space. So I will be a bit more quick, as way I will be out of time. Right. So suppose we have Laplace-Beltrami operator, hyperbolic Laplace-Beltrami operator. So we have Brownian motion, hyperbolic Brownian motion. And we have also some branching mechanism. It means that at some points on the space, the particle will decide to branch. Okay? And it will create some number of springs. Okay? So the one thing that is important is this something that we call fission potential. All these details are not important for quantitative picture. What important is fission potential? What is fission potential? This is the rate of branching multiplied by the mean number of new particles created in single act of branching. Okay? So what, and we will ask a simple question. What is the behavior of this process? Is it recurrent or transient? What means recurrent or transient? Of course, any individual particle will be transient, will go to infinity in the hyperbolic space. But the question is, what is stronger? The branching mechanism or geometry, okay? Either with time, all finite type of the space will be free of the particles, or with probability one, we can find some of spin of this family will return back to the original position with probability one. This we call it a recurrent process. And if it is not true, if this probability is not one for any body in the family to return back, then we will say that the process is transient, okay? And with Sasha Grigorian, we developed some general test on general Riemannian manifolds, which can distinguish between transient case and recurrent case. This is, we will not discuss in detail today. So I want just to say very briefly that what is important, because I have absolutely no time for this, that what is important is only what is important is the following thing. What is how this function, which is Fischer potential, how it behaves with respect to the bottom of the spectrum. So there is a bottom of the spectrum of Laplace Beltrami operator. And if we ask these simple questions about recurrence and transience, what we should look at, how the potential behaves with respect to the bottom of the spectrum. So if the potential is everywhere below the bottom of the spectrum, the process is clearly transient. If the potential is everywhere above the spectrum, well, it's absolutely clear that the process is recurrent and it could be relatively easily proved. But what is non-trivial, what will happen if on infinity, on the boundary, on the absolute, the potential is below the bottom of the spectrum, but here or there, we have some local maximum which are above the bottom of the spectrum. Okay, so this is non-trivial analytical problem. Okay, and I should show the answer for this problem because I have absolutely no chance to go in technicalities. So it's all so what will happen? We need to assess the local maximum, whether it's strong enough or not strong enough to blow up the process. It depends not only on the value of the maximum, but also on position, because the closer we are to the boundary, the more powerful is the maximum, because there's more volume around this maximum. Okay. So what's the answer for this? The answer is given in terms of some differential equation. Linear differential equation with constant coefficients. This is the equation. Okay? It depends on one parameter. The parameter should be selected from this picture. So I explained it very, very briefly. So suppose there is such a local maximum, right? Suppose we can place this local maximum in this harmonic anomaly. So somewhere here in this blue area, the potential is above the bottom of the spectrum, and in the white area it's below the bottom of the spectrum. Okay, so it's not dangerous. There is some local maximum here and there, for example. Okay, so suppose we can draw such a picture. Now we take the value of potential. Take this area. Take the value of potential inside this green domain, right? And take square root of the maximum value of potential minus bottom of the spectrum. Okay, this is the parameter nu which we place in this equation. Okay, so once again, nu is the square root of the distance between the bottom of the spectrum. Between the maximum of potential in this blue area and the bottom of the spectrum, okay? We put it here, right? So this equation, the solution starts oscillates. But if this distance is short enough, then there is no root of this equation. Then it means that we can forget about this maximum. We can forget about it. It would not affect the global behavior of the process. Okay? So if this function take a one dimensional function of the geodesic has no oscillations, is positive or negative from this point to this point with the parameter selected as I told before, it means that the process will be still transient despite the fact that the potential is above the bottom of the spectrum. Other way around, look at this picture. Look at this picture. If here you can minorize the potential in such a way that if you take the minimum value of the potential and take again the square root between bottom of the spectrum and the minimum value of potential, again put in this equation, right? And now both solutions, the two linear independent solutions of this equation, both has at least two zeros, both oscillates. It means that this maximum is strong enough to blow up the process with positive probability. Okay. Now maybe I just show it a bit. Then the next question we want to discuss is. Suppose that the process is transient. Okay, it means that there would be there would be the absolute, and all the trajectory will go eventually to infinity, right? The question is, what is the Hausdorff dimension of this attractor of the absolute? Okay, and this question, if all the parameters are constant, and the two-dimensional case is both solved first by Lavi-Selke, then Karpilevich, Sukhov and Pechersky developed it in multi-dimensional case. But the next progress is that we can do it with variable coefficients. Okay. And I show it very, very quickly on slides. So basically, we check, we take all the local maximum. I will not explain by formula, I'll explain by common sense words. Well, what we do? We take the maximum on the boundary first. If it's above the bottom of the spectrum, the process will be recurrent. It means that the Hausdorff dimension will be d minus 1. The whole infinite sphere will be covered by the traces of particle going to infinity. So now suppose it's less than the bottom of the spectrum. Then we check all local maximums and select the strongest of them in the sense that I explained before. And then we just take this formula and this maximum and the Hausdorff dimension will be such as with positive probability, such as if you have constant coefficients with this value of potential. And I need to say also that the Hausdorff dimension has a phase transition. So if we increase the potential, it behaves continuously, then at some point it will go to d minus 1, which is the whole absolute. Okay, and right. Okay, and I want to show maybe. Okay, maybe I stop here and start my next example. Not going in the technical details. The next example: in what extent it all could be done in other spaces, for example. Okay. First, I want to show some very simple test. So suppose that the picture is spherically symmetrical. That is, the space is symmetric and the potential is symmetric. Then there is a very simple test that we did with Sasha Grigorian, who tell how to distinguish recurrent and transient case, which is very simple, and I show it because. So we take the surface of the sphere, right? Suppose it depends only of the picture spherically symmetric. So there is a surface of remaining sphere multiplied by the potential. Suppose potential also spherically symmetric. Okay? Then divided by the integral like written here. And take the limit when r tends to infinity. Okay? if this limit is greater than 4, the pulse is recurrent. If the limit is less than 4, the pulse is transient. Okay, so this is very simple. But it's only this case of, well, not only the space spherically symmetric, but also the potential is spherically symmetric. Now, suppose we want to do something when potential, the space is symmetric, but not necessarily the branching mechanism is spherically symmetric. Then we adjust this also textbook stuff. That very convenient case of situations is the so-called symmetrical spaces of rank 1, when similar kind of arguments works all right. So just I use 2 minutes to remind the main annotations. You know, you have non-compact Lie group or factor of the compact Lie group. You take Lie algebras, take orthogonal complement, right? And take Artin-Sabow algebra. If the Artin-Sabow algebra is one-dimensional, we say it's rank one symmetric space. And there is a list of all the spaces, not many of them. It's just real hyperbolic spaces, complex hyperbolic spaces, quaternionic hyperbolic spaces, and one isolated space which called Kelly space. Okay? Maybe, I don't know, should I? Okay. Because if the surface of the sphere is known in all these cases, a simple formula like his, in the case of if potential is spherically symmetric, we have the complete answer. Because we just take this, substitute in the integral, compute it, and you will get the answer. The answer is that p plus 2 plus q over 2. Okay, so maybe I just be a bit more specific to say that if we have real hyperbolic space, the answer will be that the potential should be less than d minus 1 squared over 8. Okay? Is a constant potential. If we take symmetric space against everything is constant, we just put against of instead of d, p plus 2q, plus q over 2. And this would be the answer. In the case, at least in the case of constant coefficient. Okay. I don't know, maybe I don't have much time. 10 minutes, yeah? Maybe it would make sense if I show some simple example. Instead of, I want to show how all these arguments looks in a very simple case. If we take two-dimensional hyperbolic space, we take Poincaré model, and what all this means in terms of this simple situation. So maybe I skip some slides and just show this simple case. Okay, so what it all means in this simple example. Okay. If we just take the dimension to take Poincaré model, the geodesic would be the vertical lines, and we have something very simple and familiar. Okay. So what would be the answer? Okay. So this would be the equations for hyperbolic Brownian motion. Okay. If we go to geodesic coordinates, we take logarithm of vertical coordinates. So this would be the equation for this. And this would be equation that governs this process, right? Then we do just technical stuff, just differential equations. We solve it. And we obtain the solution. Okay. Solution is given, it's quite boring, but the principle elementary. This given in terms of MacDonald function, right? Thompson function. This would be exact solution. Okay, and all the coefficients are given by these Borean formulas here. Okay, but if you just take asymptotics of all these big expressions, you know, which is elementary, boring but elementary, you will get an expression for Hausdorff dimension of absolute of the of the attractor of the absolute. Maybe I explained it in slightly different terms again. What it means geometrically? Geometrically means the following. Okay, right. Okay, so what it means geometrically? Consider this picture, right? Suppose we start with a single particle. Suppose this two geodesics. We put absorbing boundary conditions on these geodesics. So all particles which touch them will be killed immediately, right? So and now suppose this potential is piecewise constant. It takes some value here, some value here, some value here, right? All these formulas, what to give these formulas? We start with single particle from here, and we count how many. We consider some horoball in this sector. We count how many particles will go from this point with absorbing conditions on the geodesics to touch this line. Okay, this is the mean number of particles that will reach this horoball close to the geodesics, right? Starting from single particle from here with absorbing conditions. If you take log of this number of particles, divide by natural parameter, you take logarithmic asymptotic of this, it will give you Hausdorff dimension of attractor. This is exactly what all these Borean formulas means. It's just explicit expression for the mean number of hits, okay, which contains the full information about the particle. Of course, in general, it's just written down as an example because generally we don't want to write such a boring formulas. We want to develop some kind of qualitative arguments. But in principle, in this simple example, it's all written in all these combinations of Bessel functions. Okay, that's basically how many means I still have?
Still, like 5-7
means. 5-7 means, right. Okay. Maybe I shall show some little stuff what will happen in the case of complex hyperbolic space. This is all real case. I for 5 minutes I show some stuff about what will happen in complex case.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
You showed us a number of formulas.
Right.
Inequalities.
Yeah.
What unites all these formulas and inequalities?
Okay. Very helpful question. What is the common? Maybe this would be a good idea to try to unite all this material. This all is about the qualitative behavior of branching Markov process. Markov process, which means that we have Markov process, which can be discrete or continuous. Could be Brownian motion, can be jump process, it depends. Okay, it could be on the graph, could be on the manifold. In the first case, it was on the graph, it was actually on the Kelly tree, the first example. The other example was about manifolds, right? So the particle, individual particle live by the law of this Markov process. From time to time, they decide to branch. And they also may have colors or spins or whatever. You like change the types, etc. And we ask some simple basic questions. The question is whether the process will die out in any finite part of space, or it will cover all the whole space will be covered by offspring of these particles, for example, which formalize like recurrence transience, okay, also this is clearly related to branching diffusion process, because it would be the thermal type solutions is some examples. Or if we find that the process is transient, then nature asks next question. Okay, the process is transient, but how rich is so it goes to infinity, but how rich is the set of directions at infinity, we see the particles of this process? It would be because any individual particle has some direction in the Cray model. If you look, you trace any individual particle, it can be easily proved that it will go eventually. This vector will look at some direction of the sphere. How rich is the set? For example, natural question is to ask what is Hausdorff dimension of the attractor. Okay, if you ask what is Hausdorff dimension, with respect to which metric, you can look on this different point of view. You can look angular metrics, stereographic projections, etc. And it turned out that it's robust. It doesn't depend on what metric you use. At least in these examples, etc. So it's a kind of quantitative picture of the whole process. Yeah, this is the answer. Okay, all right. Okay, so that's all. Yeah, fine.
Any questions?
How do you explain these square roots which appear in several places? In your
okay.
Multiple Lindley equation and in the
Hausdorff
dimension.
Okay, this could explain the following way. For example, there's a more general point of view, if you like. Suppose which is equivalent. Okay, so suppose our particle move somehow, right? So consider all the difference between this is first branching, second branching. So there is a difference between these two points, right? Okay, it has some distribution. Take projection of this on the geodesic. So we have this would be the random variable. The distance between this point, this was point when the particle branch once, this branch second time is this point. So to take this distance and project on geodesic, it will be a random variable. Now the kind of general mechanism behind all these examples is as follows. We take now moment generated function of this random variable, E theta, suppose it's a random variable xi. So the xi is a projection of the movement of the displacement of the particle between two successive branching. Take this random variable. Take moment generated function and take sub over theta. Okay, and the general kind of mechanism is that the sub should be less than 1 over kappa, where kappa is a mean number point in single branching, okay? And if you do all these computations formally in all these cases by this simple rule, you will reproduce all the square roots, etc. As a solution of simple quadratic equation, because this would be a relatively easily computable function in all these examples. It would be a solution of some quadratic equation, if you like. Okay, is the answer? Okay.
Other questions? If not, I thank the speaker again. Mm-hmm.